and welcome to episode 99 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me to talk nonsense this week is one half of the Milli Vanilli, I like to call my co-hosts. It's Tony Esmond.
I'm the part that appears in that Bruno movie, The Ghost.
Oh.
It's in that bit where he meets the ghost of Milli Vanilli.
Oh dear.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Okay.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
Dan, how are you?
Just a bit where we pretend we haven't been on air for ages.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
And Dan would normally say a one-liner.
I know.
Right now, and then laugh to himself. But he couldn't be with us this week.
No.
He's pulled a muscle. What muscle was it, Tony?
I don't know, but I saw him shooting a shotgun on Facebook earlier today, looking very heroic.
Heroic? Or was he in a bank? Was he in a bank?
He was naked.
Oh, in a bank.
Yeah.
Yes, Dan Butcher couldn't be with us this week, I'm afraid.
In my bank.
Oh. But he will be back next week for the 100th. What do we call it? Do we call it the 100th? The century? What do we... No. It's not that important, to be honest, because like, we're going to do loads of these, so it's not...
Plus, we've done more than 100 already, but it's the 100th
numbered ones. You can't add the specials to them.
No, I don't intend to. Yeah, they didn't have numbers on them, did they?
No, they're the numbered episodes. There's been almost 100 of them. Yeah, so...
Yeah, we'll be with next week.
Yeah, we'll be talking a bit more about that later. But for now, we have a treat for you. We had a chance to talk to the creator of, in our humble opinion, one of the most stunning webcomics out there at the moment.
Yeah.
That comic is the amazing apocalyptic mystery Scurry, and that creator is Max Smith. What a lovely joke.
Good egg, wasn't he?
He was really good. And, you know, we spent quite a lot... Well, I know I certainly did. We spent a lot of the chat talking about how amazing the book is. But that's not hyperbole. It's just fact.
It really is. I don't like that sort of book normally. And I read it and I fucking loved it. Absolutely loved it. Yeah.
And there's plenty of it. So stay tuned for where you can get more of it. I know a lot of our listeners are already fans of the book. Some of them pledged to his wildly successful Kickstarter. And they're eagerly awaiting to hear more about it from Mac himself, and probably to hear his lovely dulcet tones. So without further ado, should we just put it in, Tony?
Yeah, slip it in here.
Let's just slip it in. Here is our chat for your listening pleasure. So, here we are with Mac Smith, the creator of Scurry, and yet another guest from the other side of the pond. Although it's a big pond. But welcome to the show, Mac.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, good to have you, man. Yeah, good.
The Americans are always so nice and polite, aren't they?
They are polite, aren't they? We actually just get four-letter words out of the English people. And stand it. You can swear, Mac, just in case you did want to swear a lot. I swear quite a lot.
Yeah,
feel free. Yeah.
You said that's good.
I just woke up, so...
Oh, right. Do you normally wake up and then swear immediately as soon as you curse constantly? Is that what we're saying?
I have to warm up for a while.
Good man.
It's got those sort of actors' exercises where you do all different words, just swear a lot. I like that. Good.
That's what I do before every show. I just practice swear words.
Yeah.
It's good.
I try and sound more gangster, because normally when I swear it sounds a bit twee.
Sounds more twee, gangster. But, you
know. Yeah.
Oh dear. But yes, thank you for joining us, Mac. A lot of us have been looking forward to hearing more about Scurry, because I know there's a lot of our listeners who follow the webcomic and have pledged the Kickstarter, that wildly successful Kickstarter, which we'll talk about shortly, because I'm sure that became a lot bigger than you expected it to be. But for those who don't know about Scurry, just tell us a little bit more about the story itself.
It's the story of a colony of mice in an abandoned house who are struggling to survive a long, strange winter. They don't really know what's going on. They just know that something's definitely changed. There's no humans around. They've kind of been abandoned. And they start out, it's they're house mice, so they don't really know how to survive outside of food from humans and things like that, so... Now they're confused and running out of food, and they have to figure out what's going on.
So
and it kind of goes on.
It's a big mystery, isn't it? I know you say on your website this, that you're slowly sort of eking out details as it goes along. And I'm sure readers will have their own idea of what's happened in this world. But I'm guessing you've got a big story planned out and you know what the actual answers to these certain questions are. Like what's happened to the world? You clearly know what's happened.
Yeah, I have the sort of the broad strokes of the entire story. And it's not a huge surprise or anything. It's just sort of more of a setting sort of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of a post-apocalyptic sort of thing.
But, that's one of my big favorite things about it is that mystery that you slowly do see, don't you? Because at first when I was reading it, I was thinking, because you see it very much from the mice's point of view, don't you?
Yeah.
And you sort of, the world sort of opens up with the bigger creatures and the traveling that they do, and you begin to see something has happened. Definitely one of my favorite bits of it, I have to say. Really good. Yeah.
Yeah. The first book kind of starts, it's in a kind of a small area, but then it kind of expands into the entire area or, you know, surrounding countryside and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Obviously, we don't want to spoil too much about what you've got.
Yeah.
we'll talk about kind of what's happened up until now. Rather than what's going to come. But this a post-apocalyptic story about mice, where did it originally come from?
I don't know. It's hard to say.
Is it one of those tales that you just always had in your head for years before even starting
it? Yeah. Well, actually, I was kind of working on this other thing. It was sort of this sci-fi story, and it was just, I had never really written anything before, and it was just way too complicated, and I was getting kind of confused about it. So I said, I'll do something simple. And I had this other idea of this sort of mouse going in on a adventure into the woods or whatever. But that was kind of it. And that simple thing turned into this sort of multi-year project.
Wow, really? Complex. So that was your initial idea, was the mouse sort of gets lost in the woods and it's become this fucking total epic.
Exactly. And but actually I feel a lot more confident in the story than the thing I was working on. So it's kind of worked out.
I mean, I must say the admiration I have for you, because you started with a story that's all about animals, that is just constantly going through it. Now, for a lot of artists, I wouldn't say that their easiest thing to do would be animals. And it's not just mice. There are other creatures as well. And you're choosing to draw... Let's face it, you draw these creatures and they're fairly accurate, shall we say. Apart from the fact that they talk to each other.
Other than that, I think they do.
Yeah,
anyway.
The cats are built...
I mean, the cats are horrible.
They're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. But they look... and sort of act, you know, in movement-wise, they're exactly like the animals, aren't they? How much work went into sort of like referencing that, or is that something you've always liked drawing?
I kind of crammed for about 6 months on animal anatomy and things like that. I'd always drawn like creatures.
Don't tell me you've never drawn these animals before, because if that's the case, I hate you.
Well, I didn't really know how to draw mammals, and you know, they were kind of tricky with the fur and everything.
Yeah.
But I could do like insect alien things, and you know, that's easy because you can make them as ugly as you want, and if they're off, if they don't look right, nobody notices. But
oh, that's what I love about sci-fi. It doesn't have to make sense. Does it?
Yeah. So with the animal stuff, I had to really kind of focus in on a little more accurate. You know.
Yeah.
If the nose is too big or the eyes are a little off, nobody really notices. But
you've really kept that sort of balance of a sort of realistic animals, but given each of them a sort of personality. If you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I know one of them's got a little bag, and you know, this sort of thing. But especially the cats, you know, the one with the scar and the wolves and all that sort of thing. Yeah, but very much to give them each a personality must have been difficult as well, surely.
Yeah, that was pretty difficult. I think I was kind of thinking of it as more like The Lion King, where they're very much animals. They can talk to each other, but that's really it. They don't have swords or clothes or anything like that. So that's kind of tricky, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know if you. Sorry, Vince. I don't know if you had it over there, but did you have Watership Down? when the 70s or 80s, I think.
Yeah, I watched that when I was really young. It was really
Everyone does, and then everyone just traumatized by it.
Yeah, exactly. But I felt the same with your book. It really sort of hit me in the same sort of same ball bag. Do you know what I mean? It's like I found it like quite frightening in that same way that I was really worried about the creatures in Watership Down. You worry for the mice, don't you? You know.
Yeah, and another one was The Secret of Nim.
Yes.
Yeah. I saw that when I was a kid, and I remember, like, I kind of forgot about it for years, and but I just kind of had this vague memory of it being really intense and kind of dark. And a lot of kids' movies back in the late 70s, early 80s were kind of like that, you know?
So it was when kids' movies just weren't afraid to be dark, because kids love that kind of stuff anyway, don't they?
Yeah,
that's right. You should be able to stretch it. I think sometimes we're a little too safe with the kids' cartoons, aren't we? When I was a kid, that's the sort of thing I loved, you know, a little bit of danger. And it's also the stuff you remember, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, it kind of stuck with me.
And the Scurry has there's a real threat going through you. Like Tony said, you really worry about the main characters because they are the smallest thing in this world, aren't they? Like, everything around them, you know, it is a world which essentially wants to kill them. Everything outside of their little bubble wants to kill them. So
they're on the bottom of the food chain.
They are, aren't they? They are literally on the bottom of the food chain. Did you have like a cast of mice that you knew in your head? You know, were there characters that just popped up as you were devising the story, or did you just think, "Oh, I've got five mice that I can immediately imagine in my story," or was it you designed characters based on what the story needed?
It was really more of the second part. It started out as just the one mouse, Wix, orange guy,
who's clearly like the big hero of the piece, and you follow him mainly, don't you?
Yeah, as the story kind of got bigger and kind of went in different directions, I realized I needed more characters to kind of fill certain roles.
Did you find by creating those characters, though, that you new avenues of story popped up, and this, you know, the story became more epic and evolved through that process?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Especially, you know, there's a female mouse that she kind of took on a lot more of the story, and I was able to kind of tell more in depth.
Yeah.
You know, from different.
Yeah, I'm quite worried about her at the moment. That's worrying me.
Yeah. We're worried about all of them.
I don't worry about people in the real world, Mac. I just worry about your mom. That's how it works for me, my friend.
That's another thing is, like, in a movie or something, when somebody dies, you're kind of like, oh, well, whatever, you know, but whenever the dog dies or something, you're like, oh my god, I can't watch anymore.
I can't watch.
We're all about animals on this show, people. But animals.
Yeah, I've found that since I've been working on this comic that people are like, oh my god, you better not kill this character or whatever. You know, it's like,
really?
They freak out.
It seems a story that, you know, because of that threat, though, I'm sure you're going to pull some heartstrings at the moment. And is this the first thing that you've actually just written full stop?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've got
other
ideas and stories and things. I mean, it's the only, like, published thing. I was originally a concept artist for video games and stuff. So I was.
You know what? That was going to be one of my next questions. Actually, where did you start from? Because it's really, I'm guessing you're all working digitally. It has that sort of digital.
I'd love to hear your process, dude. Yeah, you really would.
Today it's mostly digital. Sometimes I'll sketch things out of a sketchbook first and scan it in. But these days I'm so much faster working digitally. I would love to paint it or something, but it would just take forever.
But it's still got that wonderful sort of painterly style. And I think
with the digital books,
like, you use a lot of effects, shall we say. But I don't mean that in sort of like cheap Photoshop effects that someone like me would use. I mean, like you know, there's an amazing page where you have this cat and it's sort of, it looks like it's carved out of fire. You know, there's lots of just crazy.
Oh, right,
you know, do you find that the digital just helps so much with those kind of, like, nice special effects that you want to do?
Yeah, I think so. I've been using Photoshop since Photoshop 3, whenever that was. That was probably 15 years ago or something.
So it's all in Photoshop, is it? Because I know some people have different sort of digital ways of doing it.
Yeah, occasionally with like interior environments and stuff, I might do like a really simple 3D block out using SketchUp or something.
Okay.
Just as kind of, I mean, I could sit there and you know, draw perspective lines all day, but it would take forever. So I just kind of add some blocks. And
I think with webcomics, though, you can almost create a rod for your own back, haven't you? Because you, once you start a webcomic, you've got that weekly or bi-weekly deadline.
Yeah, it really keeps me on my toes, I guess.
Yeah, because I know on your website you said that when you started it, you were 30 pages ahead. How is that these days?
Well, after I did the first Kickstarter, I took a couple of months off. I was pretty much caught back up, so I did another, I think I got 15 pages before I started the second arc, and now I'm pretty much just right ahead of base.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
So why, I know Dan Butcher, who couldn't be with us this week, but he does a webcomic weekly, and he wants to know, why did you choose to tell your particular tale via the medium of webcomics?
It was really, I just, I am, sorry, the dog is being crazy.
I knew you'd be a dog person. I knew this. Yeah. I hate cats.
He wants to go out, but he has to wait. But, I guess it was just, I had never done comics before. I'd never, you know, I've never worked for Marvel or DC or anything. So I was just like, nobody's going to know who I am if I just put a book out that, you know, just out of nowhere, like, here I am, buy this book, you know, nobody's going to care. So I just decided, you know, I had looked at some other webcomics like Wormworld Saga, some other things.
Okay.
And saw that they were just, you know, really successful, and they all kind of do it a little differently. So I was like, I'll just put it out. I'll just put everything out online, you know, and maybe somebody will notice. And, you know, and by doing it just sort of at a page at a time, I'm able to slowly build an audience, you know.
Yeah.
How did you go about building your audience?
Mostly just posting on social media and stuff like that. I also post on Tapastic or Tapas or whatever it's called now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's come into the news this week, isn't it? I noticed.
Yeah. I read something about it, but it sounds like they took off whatever the offending
in the term conditions or something,
So
that's good. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because that seriously kicked off, wasn't it? Wasn't it something about like if you put it on Tapastic? It's not that they own. I'm talking like I don't know anything about it. Do they sort of own a certain percentage, or they said they had some sort of wording like if you printed it
a period of time or something, you couldn't. You had to go to them for permission to print something.
It sounded, I guess, for like 30 days that they had to, you had to negotiate with them or something. Or
right.
Or something. I don't know. It was really weird.
Yeah, it was a strange one.
Yeah, I think they just added that too. So.
Right, okay.
Really?
Good. I'm one of these people who never reads terms and conditions ever.
Oh, yeah, I never read this.
So basically, you're the people that they exactly aimed for when it came to writing.
Yeah, totally.
Completely. Yeah.
But I guess those sort of mediums just help get the word out, doesn't it? You know, to those sort of... Because there are some people that just read from Tapastic, aren't they? Rather than just going online or... are there any online webcomic collectives that you're a part of or you have links to or anything?
No, not really. I've thought about it. There's but like Hiveworks and a few others.
Yeah, Hiveworks is quite a big one, isn't it? Hiveworks has got quite...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And it's also... It's quite professional looking, I think, Hiveworks, which leads me into the look of the website of Scurry. Because whenever we talk about webcomics on the show, we always say, you know, the better and more professional your website and your webcomic can look, the more interested that we're going to be in reading it. You know, because you see some people just, you know, just throwing things out there, and it's color, you know, it's not designed right, it's not laid out right, and you've got ads bloody everywhere. But Scurry has quite a lot, you know, there's a lot of info as well on Scurry. I've noticed there's character sheets, you know, you've got art, you've got links. Was the look and website hugely important to you before you even posted page one?
Yeah, I didn't want it to look cheap. And I've used it's actually a Squarespace site.
Oh, really? Okay.
Interesting.
And I've never, I had used their, I used their service for my regular website too. But
okay, and you find them good, do you? Or
yeah, it's pretty good, but there's no comic template.
Okay.
And so that was really tricky. I kind of dug around online and found a guy who had sort of hacked a comic template into the.
Oh, I'll get you.
To make it work with Squarespace. And really, once I kind of plugged that in, the rest became really kind of simple because Squarespace does all that other stuff really well. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of web comic creators out there. They take these sort of templates from things like Squarespace and they use that, don't they? And then they can totally customize it. So it's fairly user intuitive, Squarespace, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy. I know a little bit of HTML and JavaScript. You know, just a little, just enough to kind of be dangerous about it. That's what my website
is. It sort of the one, forgive me, because I was born in the Iron Age, Mac, so I don't understand things, but is it the sort of thing that you can queue up posts? So, say, for example, you're away doing a convention or on holiday with your family or something, can you queue up, so it'll get posted while you're away and that sort of thing, is it?
Yeah. What it really is it's a blog, sort of, but it only posts like one blog post at a time, so it's like one comic page at a time.
Okay.
So you can schedule those out as long as you want.
Okay. And do you keep a big eye on daily numbers? Is it something you think, keep an eye on working out what works and what doesn't? Do you keep an eye to that, or do you not worry?
I'll look at it about maybe once every week or so. Just kind of checking it out. But
cool.
These days it's pretty consistent, so.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, do you find that posting at a certain time or a certain, you know, tag on it or something will work and you'll sort of stick with that, or is that how it works?
I think like early in the week is usually better. Like Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I post links on Facebook and stuff, and I get a lot more
hits.
It hits in the early of the week. Later in the week, everybody else has.
I suppose the week begins to drag you down, doesn't it? Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, but I'm fully intend to do stuff later in the week, and it never seems to. I know what you mean.
Yeah, I always want to post on like Friday or something, but it's kind of a waste of time. Really.
Right. Good. Worth remembering.
Vince, how do you find the promo? You know, do you find it's a constant? Some people are just salesmen, aren't they? Whereas other people find it quite hard to do the promo.
Yeah, it's. I'm definitely not one of those guys. I spend way too much time on screwing around on the internet, but so I kind of post things as I go. But
yeah,
right, okay.
But the book itself does all the work for you, though, doesn't it?
Mate, it's fucking awesome. I've got to tell you, it's one of our favorites.
Thanks.
It's absolutely brilliant, mate. I highly recommend it to anyone. Yeah, very good.
I remember when I first discovered it, it sort of blew me away, and then I think 2 weeks later. Dan Butcher had it as one of his recommendations, didn't he, on
that's
the show?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then I'll watch this. listen to this.
Are you going to listen to this episode, though? Because some people don't if they don't like the sound of their own voice.
I don't.
Oh, yeah. Instant.
were you always a comic reader? Mac, did you grow up with comics? What sort of thing, if you did?
Yeah. Well, I grew up with comics, and I was a big fan. I guess like every other kid my age. You know, it was the whole 90s, early 90s kind of boom or whatever.
Okay. You're an Image guy, are you, or early Marvel Image?
Well, the early Image. It also kind of killed my interest in it for a while.
Yeah, we hear that a lot, I see. Yeah.
And I've kind of gotten back into it a little here and there over the years. But these days I mostly read, you know, more independent stuff, I guess.
Mm. Do you find that's because you're working on independent, you know, something independent yourself? So you're looking at other creators that are out there doing similar kind of things?
Yeah, I think so. And just, you know, I grew up with superhero stuff and I'm just kind of tired of it. not extremely tired of it.
Yeah. Especially outside of the main, yeah, outside of the main scene. Certainly in Independence, it needs to be quite a strong book for a superhero book to work, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. To do, you know, superhero comics outside of the sort of the well-known ones is, I think, kind of an uphill struggle.
Yeah, I think I agree. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Who? Just for us, though, who are some of your favorite superheroes? There's a question.
I guess I have a lot. I really like Captain America, actually.
Mm.
Okay, cool.
Some kind of... I grew up with X-Men and stuff like that. But
yeah, the sort of Jim Lee era, that sort of period.
Yeah, and just before that, I think like Mark Silvestri and stuff.
Yeah.
And actually, the first comic I ever bought, I think, was an X-Men comic, but it was like all the X-Men were dead. and it was
that's
just kind of
these
like...
Days.
Yeah, it's kind of like the... almost sort of like B-League kind of survivors that were... It was like this crazy Lovecraftian horror one-shot thing. It was really kind of interesting.
All right. Okay.
That's kind of what, that's when I realized I was like, oh, comics are cool.
are you influenced by... I mean, you're clearly influenced by animation, I'm going to guess, but is there any movies that sort of influence your storytelling style and stuff like that?
Well, I'm definitely an 80s kid, but I kind of like the more kind of obscure stuff. Like, I don't know if they'd call them obscure, but stuff like, Dark Crystal, Jim Henson movies, stuff like that.
Okay.
How excited were you about the recent news that there's going to be a Netflix Dark Crystal prequel series?
Mm.
Yeah, it was really cool. I had no idea. I saw people were posting it everywhere. Yeah. So I was like, oh man, it's great.
Yeah. I was just struck by somebody's kept that well under their hat because they were posting images of the puppets
Tonight,
and that's taken a while to build them and get all that started, I suppose. Yeah.
For the longest time, I thought it was going to be another film. I thought they were going to make another film of it rather than a TV series. So it's...
Right.
Yeah, I think they attempted to a few times, but never went anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
I always remember that was... when I was at school, there was an art book in the library which was the making of the Dark Crystal, but it was all the sketches. That was one of my first introductions to sort of making of books. And just immediately, if you've ever seen the artwork that goes into the Dark Crystal, never mind I think the artwork book, in my opinion, some people just go, how dare you, is actually better than the film. Because there's...
Yeah, I have that book around somewhere.
Oh,
it's really good.
Beautiful stuff in there, amazing. And half of it, like, is probably just a background rock or something that's scratched into a wall. But when you can see it on a page and you see the detail going into it, it just adds so much more of a dimension to it. You know, it's great stuff.
I guess like Brian Froud basically just built that entire world, which is pretty amazing.
Mm. Yeah, there's so much going on in each panel of that film, isn't there? It's just almost too busy for the eye sometimes. It bears watch, rewatch, and rewatch. I think is why it's so fondly thought of, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And now, I think that they had a team for each, you know, Skeksis or puppet or whatever.
Right.
And they were all, like, really gave it their all, I think, on each one. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, you liked an X-Men comic that was quite dark and had everyone die in it. The Dark Crystal is pretty dark, and and now you're doing this webcomic, which...
I'm more worried now than ever about you.
So you could say in some ways that you've been influenced quite a lot by the stuff that you had growing up.
Yeah, it's sort of like this vibe or mood that I'm kind of going for. It's kind of really... it's kind of creepy and somber, but it's not like a, you know, like some kind of gory horror fest.
No.
It's like
an R-rated all ages film, because like anyone can look at it, but the intensity, you know, the tension of it is properly sort of nail biting stuff, which is amazing for a tale all about mice.
Who do you enjoy drawing the most out of it? I'd be interested to hear, Mac.
Actually, the moose character has been really fun.
I was about to say that's my favorite as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very strange animals.
Yeah.
Their nose just kind of like hangs over their face. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Was that always something that was going to happen from day one, or did you just, as you're writing, just sort of, this would be quite cool to have a moose?
Have a moose. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I needed the thing about the mice is that it's hard for them to fight anything. They basically have to run, so it's nice to have somebody on their side.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you what really reminded me of. Have you seen the movie The Mist?
Yeah.
And you know at the end, there's that big sort of walking creature over the top. Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of that. Yeah, I kind of like that. Yeah.
I think that's because of the scale, though, isn't it? Because like Witch is looking up at this huge moose. who's just awesome and really nice.
Yeah.
So
I'm looking forward to see where that goes. Yeah.
That was one kind of thing I discovered as I was doing it, is like to be able to, like all the other animals are basically like Godzilla to these mice, you know. They're just these immense things, even though to us they're very small. But...
Yeah. Cool. Have we got any other animals coming up that you can tease, or is there anything? I mean, we've had a big gambit so far, you know, with the beavers and is it an eagle and you know, this sort of thing. Is there anything coming up that you'd like to?
Oh, there's a few more.
I'm guessing, though, you're not going too crazy with it, which is what I kind of like. I like that it isn't like, oh, there's a Bengal tiger just totally appear out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's all within...
Unless one escaped from the zoo or something.
Yeah,
I don't know,
but... yeah. But it's all within the realm of possibility in some strange kind of way. It all feels natural.
Yeah.
You know.
Go on. Since I moved up here to the Northwest, it's everything's very a lot of the scenery and stuff is kind of based on this area.
Yes, because you currently reside in Portland, is that right?
Right. Yeah.
Which we were talking before we started recording that is a comics hub, isn't it? A comics and creative hub for music, art, and all kinds. So you've got all of that, and do you find yourself going out for walks and just taking loads of reference shots, etc.?
Yeah, when I can. I've been so busy with this. I haven't had near as much chance as I would like to go explore, but...
I'll tell you what, it's very apropos to the day we're recording, but it's got almost like a Twin Peaks feel to it. It's that sort of, you know...
Yeah, that was a Northwest thing, too.
How do you mean, Tony? Yeah. Do you mean like the setting or the fact that, I don't know, there's weird things moving backwards?
Well, it's creepy weird things happening in that sort of area of America, you know, where it's quite rainy and there's forests and you know, lots of clouds and, you know, that sort of thing.
Rain and mist and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
That also helps. That helps with the art stuff too, because if I can just put everything in fog, it makes it a lot easier to...
Yeah, no one has to worry about details, do they, when it comes to fog? Yeah.
Well, only for everyone but you, Mac. I think you're doing yourself a disservice there, my friend. I have to say, when your book sort of hit my eyeballs was when the mice go into the... I think it's a kitchen and it's all a mess in one of the early pages. Mm. And I thought, fuck me, look at the detail in that. Mm. I've got to tell you, that has got to be someone's kitchen somewhere.
Actually, that was kind of based on that. A house I lived in when I was growing up.
Oh, right, great, yeah.
it's a little messier than...
Yeah.
Did you have a reference of it, or was that all from memory then?
It's basically from memory, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Nice, wow, yeah.
I hated that house. So.
Well,
did you have plastic fruit in that one as well, did you?
There probably was, yeah.
Yeah, when you see your pages, though, it's blatantly obvious that lighting is a hugely important thing of the story. But obviously with your concept art that you work on video games and stuff, did you find that that built up your confidence in lighting? Because that can be a very tricky thing to get right, lighting, you know.
Yeah, totally. Mm.
So that's hugely important to... Because it totally adds to the atmosphere and tension, doesn't it? There's a wonderful page of like wolves and there's light behind them. In fact, I think on your website you have a picture on your art page, which it's like an animated GIF where you can see it in three stages of all the different lighting. You know, is there any specific idea behind the lighting when you work at a panel? you know, to show a mood, or is it just whatever looks coolest at the time?
I'm going for, you know, definitely a certain mood, and it's kind of, a lot of times it's what you don't show that's so interesting, rather than what you show. So, you know, I, a lot of times they'll be backlit, or
yeah,
there'll be a lot of fog that kind of picks up light and a lot of rim light.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, a lot of times if you just put a big, a heavy rim light around the character, it really pops them out of the panel, you know. Okay. Show up a lot better.
Yeah.
So those were sort of tools that you picked up in your sort of full-time job before you decided to also do a webcomic on top of that? Because I'm guessing you still have a full-time job and the webcomics aren't...
Yeah, I still do... I work freelance now, so I do a little concept art on the side, just enough to kind of pay the bills.
Yeah, but how much of your time has this webcomic taken over?
A lot of time.
Because
there's another question Dan actually asked was, how did you find the Kickstarter process? Because you went down a storm, didn't you? But sometimes total success on Kickstarter can bring the stress on as well, can't it? I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely a pleasant surprise that it took off. But I'd heard so many horror stories about Kickstarters and people screwing them up that I really kind of I spent several two or three months just setting it up and getting quotes and things like that.
Good, yeah, good idea. But, yeah, I think some people just run into it, don't they, blindly?
Oh yeah,
that's the people who come a cropper, I think. Yeah.
But, and you know, people underestimate shipping costs and things like that. And I was like, I was determined not to do that.
Yeah, because that was one of the things. I mean, a lot of people in the UK, because you put on quite a big, it's a big book, a lovely glossy book. And I know I've seen pictures of people who got their Kickstarter, and you deliver a hugely professional package with prints, and just the book itself looks amazing. But the postage costs, certainly for the UK, was pretty high, wasn't it? I mean, I guess you had to factor
to ship from the US is super expensive. Yeah. But I've actually found a distributor for the EU and really international, and it sounds like they're really reasonable. So I think
Kickstarter, cool.
Yeah, that's good.
would that also work for the existing book?
Yeah.
Good. We'll have to talk soon then. Right, splendid.
Yeah. Have you been able to? Are you able to say who that is yet, or is that still in negotiations?
Well, actually, I'm using. It's actually a game, board game company.
Okay.
Celestial Games or something like that.
Oh wow.
They do a lot of Kickstarter.
Right.
Fulfillment in the UK.
And I guess like with it being board games, they have to get the best price because they're shipping out like big boxes and like all kinds, isn't it?
They've been really good so far. The packaging seems nice, so the books aren't getting damaged or anything.
Awesome.
Oh, good. Yeah, makes life easier for you as well, I'm sure, Mac, doesn't it?
So
from the Kickstarter, which was wildly successful, which we'll get into at the moment, you obviously got a load of books printed up. So they all went out to the people who pledged. Did you also get more stock for yourself to sell online, etc.?
Yeah, I got a few extra for the big premium slipcase edition. That's just for Kickstarter, but the you could get the regular hardcover or softcover.
Nice. I like the idea that if you pledge on a Kickstarter, you know, even if it's a little bit more, you're getting something that will only be available on that Kickstarter.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, we get a lot of Kickstarters over here, Mac.
Yeah,
we get a lot of Kickstarters over here, Mac, that appear in the shops before they appear through your letterbox, and I don't often think that's fair, you know.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do that.
yeah. Do you sell at conventions? Do you do many conventions? Because you've got a few up your way, haven't you? Is it Stumptown? That's one of the ones there, is it?
There's Rose City Comic Con.
Right.
There's Emerald City Comic Con, which isn't that far away. It's only 2 or 3 hours from here.
That's one of the big ones in the US, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a biggie, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a big one. There's several smaller ones around, too, but I'm not really sure. I haven't really tried too hard to get into them yet. I want to try to do some next year, but...
Okay.
It's pretty difficult to get in one lately. So I don't know.
It does seem that way. It's like that over here as well, you know. The good ones are difficult to get into, I think.
Yeah, they fill up fast, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm on a waiting list for a couple, so we'll see how that goes. But
are you hoping to do New York at all, or?
Maybe that's a bit far for me, but
right. Okay.
Maybe once I have a couple of books under my
Okay. I'm only saying that for purely selfish reasons because I'm going there this year, and I'll do.
I tell you what, that one's exploded. I tell you what though, dude. The moment you get onto conventions, be prepared to sell out because this, you know.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, quality sales. Yeah,
well, I hope so.
don't quote me on that. I don't want your lawyers talking to me.
Quote him straight away.
You said.
Another thing about the Kickstarter, I must say, I want to shake your hand because you don't have any of those pledges that's like $10 just for a thank you. You went in.
We hate those.
Yeah. You went straight in and you pledge and you get the book. You know, that was all. No messing about was there. You know, it was just all about the book itself.
I wanted to keep it really simple and just, you know, some people have like 20 different tiers. And I'm like, God, I don't want to wade through all this stuff trying to figure out what I want, you know?
Especially
so I just wanted it really simple.
Yeah, especially when they have things like variant covers and things like that, don't they? There's like a tier for cover A, there's a tier for cover B, you know, you've got to be careful about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that just adds to the complexity of trying to ship the things out too, so it's...
Yeah, and you had to ship out quite a few, didn't you?
Yeah.
How many did you do in the end, dude, are you allowed to say?
I think it was like 2,500 books.
Fuck no.
Jesus Christ. Because I know when I was speaking to Mac originally, it was like, we'd love to get you on the show to talk about Scary. He goes, can we do it a little bit later in the year? Because I'm still sorting out.
Can't move in my house.
Yeah. Although,
that was a pretty stressful time.
Because I guess you had to think about the postage costs for all of these individual. Like, you know, that's almost a full-time job in itself, isn't it?
Just the spreadsheet's a full-time job on that fucking thing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, like I use the distributor guys in the UK. I'm also using one here in the US and Canada. I found some people that can handle the shipping.
Yeah.
Right.
So I didn't have to physically pack the books myself and mail them separately, so thank God for that. if I had to do that, it would just take me months, and it's like, is this my job now?
yeah And I guess also you want to fulfill on these pledges, don't you? You don't want it to be you know, because of the nature of the campaign, the book is almost already done, isn't it, as soon as you have the Kickstarter started. Did you have the whole thing designed when you started the Kickstarter?
Most of it. I had all the story elements were done. There was back matter stuff and some design things I needed to work out afterwards, but
because it's got a wonderful is it a foil embossed sort of cover as well, one of the, is it that,
yeah, what? There's a, it's a spot gloss cover, but the slipcase has a foil foil stamp.
See, coming from a design and print background, you're talking my language.
Oh really? You probably know it a lot more than I do, but...
Gloss. Oh, spot varnish, wonderful.
I had no idea how much work went into it, like actually constructing a book, you know. There's the little end caps of the things that go on top of the pages, like I had no idea. I had to, you know, kind of walk through each tiny little step,
because I guess you've created the web comic. You do them as full pages, don't you? But I know sometimes when they go to print, some people who do the webcomics, it's a new learning sending something like that to print. Was there any unforeseen areas that you had to fix or any problems?
There was a few things. I'd already done it in a, sort of a normal American...
it's American comic book size, isn't it? Yeah.
Proportions, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So... although it's printed out bigger, larger than regular comic.
Nice.
The text, I had to kind of figure out how to do that black vector text or whatever.
Right.
I have no idea.
Oh, what? So it didn't print out sort of slightly faded, so that the actual sort of the blacks were a rich black.
Yeah, it's just more crisper. You know.
Mm.
Okay.
I think that's quite... other than that, it was fairly straightforward.
Yeah. There was the... You know, I had to change it from RGB to CMYK, but there wasn't a big change in the...
Are those things that you had previous knowledge of before you even started the strip?
Not really. Well, sort of. I've done some print stuff years and years ago, but I was not an expert at it at all.
Yeah. So it was big learning. From the Kickstarter then, if for all of those webcomic people out there who have their huge webcomics and they're ready to do a Kickstarter for the completed version,
yeah,
what would be the advice you'd give them before starting?
Definitely research the shipping. That's I can't overemphasize how huge that is.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is just my opinion, but really work on the video Kickstarter.
Okay.
Oh god, yeah. Right. Yeah.
A lot of times it's just somebody's kind of sitting there talking about it and
to camera it all looks a bit a bit B movie, didn't it? Sometimes I know what you mean. Yours is good, but I know what you mean. You just get some bloke in a baseball cap talking to the camera.
Lot of times they don't even show the comic itself, and I'm like, "That's what you're selling, man. I want to see what you got." You know?
Yeah, and, definitely.
But
yeah.
Did you emphasize updates? Did you say, right, I'm going to do an update every week? I want to send, you know, the messages you get through Kickstarter to say, you know, this is what's happening. We, you know, we're 12 days into it now, or 2 weeks, or something like that. Was that something?
Yeah,
you...
I tried to send one at least one a month, but
right,
sometimes more often than that. So
yeah. Oh, great. Okay, because that's the problem. People, you see a lot of comments on some Kickstarters, don't you? Like, what's happening? I haven't heard. That's quite a comment.
You don't want that to happen.
Yeah, definitely.
If it's your first Kickstarter, I would recommend finishing the book first before.
Yeah.
You know, don't go in there and say, you know, hey, this is my project.
I saw one recently that was a lot of concept sketches, and this is what my comic's going to be about. And there was an awful lot of comments like, "Where's the first? At least the first page. We'd like to see that." Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I really wanted to finish mine before I decided to do the Kickstarter, I'd have that.
And so it's sort of print ready.
Yeah. You got so much more to show them as well, and then you just got to worry about things like stretch goals. Which you absolutely smashed. Did you expect that to happen?
I don't remember if I had the stretch goals figured out when I started the Kickstarter. I think I had a few of them.
Yeah.
And then I kind of blew through those and added a few more.
Yeah. So in some ways you were thinking, you know, you were confident, but you thought, oh, I probably won't be able to get these stretch goals. And then when it took off, you thought, oh God, I need to think of more.
You hear that quite a lot though, don't you, for successful ones?
Yeah.
That can be kind of dangerous too, though, if you add a lot of bells and whistles to it that just add a lot of work to it.
Yeah.
Because it can get really expensive, so.
Yeah.
I was kind of careful that I did a lot of digital rewards and stuff like that that didn't really add to the cost. So,
I think that's a good idea, isn't it? You know, to do things like that. It's a good way of giving people extra without almost having to pay through the nose yourself, isn't it, for printing and postage and stuff.
Adding pages and stuff like that.
Also, you're very clear on your Kickstarter page, which you can still see now if you want to see what the Scurry page looked like for your own reference. It's still up on Kickstarter. You know, you even go through, like, how many pages there is, the size of it. You know, you've done a nice sort of mock-up of what the book looked like when it's opened, the three editions. You know, it's all there, isn't it? The detail is all there for the people to see. So, no wonder it worked. as well as it did. Congratulations. I look forward to the second Kickstarter.
Well, that's going to be our next question. What's next? Come on, Mac, what's next?
I'm working like mad to finish the second book, so... I hope to do a Kickstarter by September, somewhere around there.
So you've given yourself a sort of deadline for a Kickstarter, have you?
Yeah. And I'm like, it's been a hectic... I've been trying to, you know, get the books out and keep the book
live
going,
your life and not go insane. Yeah.
Oh, there's no living life. It's just...
So you're just in a dark house with a huge beard. Yeah. Surrounded by actual mice.
If you don't mind me asking, Mac, have you pitched it to any comic companies? Have you been to, I know Dark Horse is a little company to you, you know, for example, have you been to anyone and say, look, I've got this, it's clearly very successful. Did you fancy taking it off my hands and, you know, publish it or anything like that?
I haven't yet, but I, at some point I kind of want to do like a wide release sort of thing.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm really kind of like, I enjoy doing it this way because I have all the, you know, complete control. I can make the books however I want to do it. So,
yeah. Okay. To me, it's a no-brainer. It's a, you know, to take that off your hands, you know, it's a successful product. They know it's going to sell. You could put a lovely, you know, slip case out again, oversized. You could do what you like with it, really. Yeah. You know.
And, you know, I just want it to be, if I do a deal with someone, I want it to be, you know, I want to have some kind of leverage to be able to say, hey, look, I know this works, so
yeah,
check it out.
Yeah.
And I was a couple of book publishers kind of reached out to me about maybe publishing it in the future or whatever.
But those deals weren't necessarily right for you, or you didn't feel confident in going in that direction?
Yeah, not yet, really. And it was just kind of like you have to give them all your rights, and I mean all the, you know, publishing rights at least. And it's like, okay, I mean the payments they were going to pay me were, I mean, I guess they were okay, but they weren't great. I mean, I make the same amount of money on the Kickstarter.
For something that you're pouring your heart and soul into and that is completely yours, you don't want to sell it short when you get to, you know, just for a quick buck, do you?
Yeah. And I mean, they could take it and put it out and maybe it doesn't sell, and then it just doesn't exist anymore, you know, like, unless I can get the rights back or something.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
At least this way I can kind of hold on to everything and do it the way I want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So the first book was 80 pages of story, wasn't it? Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that what?
Somewhere
around then. Are you following the same format? The second book is going to be exactly the same?
This one's going to be, this one's four parts. The first book was three. This one's going to be about 96 pages, somewhere around there. And then some more concepts and stuff in the back. Maybe a map, stuff like that. So.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, God. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Especially in the second book, you kind of need one. So.
Yeah, there's a definite layout, isn't there? And they quote distances, don't they? Like in mouse distances, how long it would take to get somewhere as well. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, there's kind of a time crunch on this second story. So.
Yeah. They're definitely hobbits, aren't they? They're mice hobbits, aren't they?
Sort of, yeah, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a story that does appeal to a pretty wide audience, I think. You've obviously got that post-apocalyptic crowd. You've got the animals and the anthropomorphic crowd, which is huge in itself. I mean, you know, even if it's just mice, you've got, like, you know, Mouse Guard and... What's the Avon
Oming book? Yeah. Mice Templar.
Redwall or something to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you purposely stay away from reading any similar kind of things when you create?
I don't know if it was necessary looking back, but I knew Mouse Guard and Redwall and stuff existed, and I'd never read them, so I was kind of like, well, maybe I shouldn't read them because I might rip them off or something.
Yeah. Even if it's subconsciously, isn't it? You know, you don't want to have the. You know, if there's any comparison, you can just sort of say, "Well, you know, great minds think alike."
Yeah, but, excuse me.
Yeah.
But this is completely unique. This story completely stands on its own. You know, and I'm loving it. You know, it's
yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, I'm a man in my late 70s, and I fucking absolutely love it. Yeah, I did it in one go, dude. I read the whole book like one sitting. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't really sure who the audience was, other than just me. You know.
Yeah. And that's best way, though. I suppose,
that is
it?
The best, you know? Way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, do you see? I mean, obviously, you're in the trenches. You're neck deep in the trenches of Scurry right now. Do you see other ideas in the future? Maybe in the next, you know, just say 5 years down the line, is there another Max Smith project in the pipeline?
Yeah, I've got a couple of ideas out there. This book, this isn't. I originally intended for this book to be three books.
Yeah.
And then maybe some, you know, anthology kind of stuff on the side. But after that, you know, hopefully roll into the next thing. So
yeah. So you are currently on the 3-book rule at the moment, shall we say?
Yeah.
Ah, interesting.
It's not a bad idea. I know a friend of ours, we were just talking about him earlier before we came on air, Chris Wildgoose, is doing the same with one of his books. And you don't want to get, whilst it is great, you don't want to get tied down to it for the rest of your life, do you?
Yeah, I mean, it could be something that I kind of come back to. It's certainly capable of doing that.
Mm.
And it's divided into episodes online, and those episodes are basically the size of a comic. So it's...
That's what I was going to ask you about, actually, because it almost is separated into like singular issues, isn't it? Was that? Did you have an idea of doing it as, you know, when you originally thought this, rather than just webcomics, did you think about doing individual issues?
Yeah, well, I really had no idea. I was kind of just making it up as I went along. I was like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. I'll just do it as comic books, you know, and maybe I can...
I'll tell you what, for someone who makes it up, you make...
Yeah, he did all right. Yeah.
The first episode is actually like 32 pages or something, but the rest of them are like 24. So
do you stick to that format now? You've got that sort of like, right, it's going to be a 24-page template.
I think it's a good number of pages to kind of tell a chunk of story, I guess. So.
How do you break down those individual issues then? Do you write a script and then sketch it out, or do you do layouts and then write a script and then full art?
I write a kind of very rough script / outline, and then I do sort of thumbnails of each page all the way through. Usually, I kind of take it in scenes. It's usually kind of 5 or 6 pages, and I'll just work those up. All at the same time to kind of keep the lighting the same as
because there's a nice balance of dialogue and action as well. I noticed there's a lot of certainly the colony when they're talking, that's where you're getting a lot of almost the back matter of the world and stuff, but then you'll spend 2 or 3 pages of like cats furiously trying to murder mice. And those have a real cinematic feel to them. You know, you take time with action scenes rather than rushing it. Do you find that doing the webcomics gives you that kind of freedom to play, you know, to pace your action in that kind of way?
Yeah, I can kind of experiment, you know.
Yeah.
The pacing thing has been really interesting.
And
just figuring out how I can actually slow things down or speed things up.
Because you are a fan of a splash, like an impactful splash page, which sometimes will make the reader really, really concerned about the fate of characters.
Yeah, especially you've got to wait for the next page.
Yeah.
All right. That's the thing. I wish I could, if I could post a little faster, that'd be great, but twice a week.
You're doing well.
Yeah.
Sometimes people have to wait for a few days to see what happens. But.
To be honest, seeing the pages you're doing, I think people will wait. And if people haven't read this yet, they've got so many pages. There's like 120, 110, 120 pages that they can start off from page one, which is amazing. I mean, sometimes that's quite daunting for when you first look at a webcomic and you see the amount of pages that are on there. But with Scurry, it's a book that you can get into from like page one, isn't it, and just get straight into it. Now, before we have to let you go, there's one thing I wanted to ask about. I noticed that on the Scurry website, you have links to the Russian translation and the Italian translation of the book. How did those come about?
People just emailed me and said, "Hey, I want to translate your book."
Really?
Really? Okay.
Kind of out of nowhere. Apparently, there are a few people out there who really are into. They translate multiple books and post them. And
Mac, I thought you were going to say there's some Americans who are quite close to Russian people. I wonder where we're going with that.
Yeah, there's several of those.
So there's people who just did it for fun, did they? Or did you have to pay
them? Well, they do it on their own website, and if they make some money off advertising or something, I don't really care.
So, nice. Oh, that's
whatever.
Nice. Yeah.
I just tell them, you know, they just have to link to my site. They can do whatever they want.
So did you essentially just give them the pages then with all the speech bubbles blank? and then they just...
I don't even do that. I don't have time to really kind of manage all that stuff, so they just kind of paint over the speech bubbles and add their own text.
Right. Have you ever fact checked it? Have you gone in and said, yeah, you ever done that with it?
I wouldn't even know where to start.
I get you. Okay.
Yeah. I used to check out the Russian one, but the comments can be like, they're fierce, man.
Oh, they? Oh, right. Okay.
No, yeah. They're all right, but I kind of run it through Google Translate.
Yeah, I get you. So you haven't checked it, and the wolves are shouting down with capitalism or anything like that. Are you? Right?
No, I have no idea. They might be.
That'd be brilliant, wouldn't it?
So,
hey, whatever.
Now, last thing, right? It says on the website that you enjoy bad movies.
Oh yeah, so do we.
Now, so do we. When you say that, how bad are we talking? Because we love the really awful ones. What's the last?
Are we talking trauma bad? Are we talking that or?
Oh yeah. There was something. Have you seen the Miami Connection?
Oh no! What's that? Oh, man. I've heard of it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to check that one out if you love bad movies. It's...
I'm writing that down.
Oh, Miami Connection.
Yeah, there's tons of really terrible movies out there I love. But yeah, that's.
I tell you what, that dude, Miami Connection. I love the fact that he gave us one that we didn't know. We love that.
Yeah. I noticed that Samurai Cop is on Netflix. I'm going to have to
watch Samurai Cop, that's a great one.
Is that on Netflix now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, amazing.
I think there's a sequel to it as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's somewhat similar.
Yeah. The Full Moon stuff, you know, like trances and demonic toys and, you know, sort of stuff. I like all that.
What was the last truly awful film you saw?
Well, the last truly... Terminator Genesis was...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I feel sick.
I was talking to somebody about that earlier today, and it reminded me, it's almost so bad it's good. Like, it's so funny.
So it's not a bad movie that makes you angry, then?
That franchise has been so run into the ground that it's almost like I can't feel anything anymore. Yeah.
Somebody sent me a text today suggesting we go and see Baywatch as a little gang of friends. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't think I can be friends with you anymore now.
A lot of these movies, they feel like they were written by like a team of executives.
Monkeys.
Or marketing. There's no story or anything. It's just...
Yeah. And like the funny bits are funny. They're like the funny bits with the funny bits taken out. They're just not even funny anymore. Yeah, they're just so sort of corporately designed to get clicks on a YouTube channel that they've just lost all soul anymore. I think
they have pop culture references that become dated within 2 weeks of the film coming out.
Anyway, back to Instagram.
I love the bad movies that the guys that were making them. They were just like they were putting their heart and soul into them, and they really had no idea what they were making. But you know, I kind of love them. You know.
Yeah, there's a real trend of like certainly modern movies that are made sort of good intentionally bad, which turns out things like Wolf Cop. Have you all seen Wolf Cop?
Yeah, Hobo with a Shotgun. I was thinking there's all these sort of ones, aren't there? Yeah,
those usually don't work for me. Sometimes they do, but usually it's kind of like too obvious. It's only fun if you kind of unintentionally do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I might have to play a clip of Miami Connection as an outtake for this show.
Yeah. I watched A Field in England today.
Oh, don't.
Have you seen that?
Yes.
I don't think I've seen that one.
There's a lot of dongs in it.
Oh.
That's a bit shocked by the dongage number in it.
That's not a resounding advertisement for it, Tony. Oh dear. Do you see, Mac? Do you see how downhill our interviews can go?
Oh, it comes down to dongs.
If we ever create a book, that's going on the back.
No, just put it in quotes.
Yeah. Mac Smith, great curry.
It all comes down to dongs.
It's kind of a world view, I think.
Oh dear. No, but we are all 100% fans of Scurry, and we hope for all you listeners out there, if you haven't checked this book / webcomic out, please do, because it's worth it.
Yeah.
And as you can see,
thanks, I appreciate it.
Yeah, Matt, as you can hear now, Matt's one of the nice ones. See? Yeah. If you're horrible to us, Mac, I will put it in the outtakes after the show. Remember that.
Yeah. Well, it's sunny today, and it's not a cloudy, rainy mess that it's been for the last 6 months. So I guess I'm in a better mood today.
You're still not going outside, though, are you?
No. I can't stand the sun, really.
You've got comics to do, my friend.
Yeah, you've got comics to make. Come on, people who make comics don't see the sun.
Yeah.
For those...
I can see it from a window, that's about it.
Yeah. Or a screensaver. Now, for those who don't know where Scurry is, tell us where people can find the webcomic and your good self online.
You can go to scurrycomic.com for the comic. And let's see. On Twitter, I think I'm Maximus Mouth. MacSmith Mouth. Why I don't know why that's the name.
Why, come on, you know, why did you ask the mouth?
I think I made that account years ago, and I never really used Twitter until recently.
Are you sure? Are you sure there isn't a different account for every different part of your body?
Yeah, should be. Yeah.
Funny, I'm at Deep Throat.
Oh dear! Thank you very much for joining
us. Yes, brilliant, mate. Yeah, we've been looking forward to this one, Mac. Very much so.
Oh, thanks.
Great topic, mate.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
So there you go. Wasn't
that was good,
Mac?
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very good. Thank you very much, Mac.
I like American people. They're cool, aren't they?
Yeah, they are actually some of the nicest people we talk to. Don't
they? Actually, are apart from Vanda, obviously. I don't mean that Vanda. We love you, Vanda.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a monster in human form. No. No, we love you, Brian. But seriously, Mac, thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoy what you were doing after you hung up, which you might have to stay tuned for the outtakes to see what that was.
Nothing rude.
Nothing rude, but it is funny. So there you go. Should we just... We've got some shout-outs. We've got some good comics to talk about. Yeah. Tony's got a bundle of shout-outs, so as soon as it's a shout-out section, he can take over. Here you are, Tony Esmond.
Oh, okay. Well, I have to say, Pat Mills has got a new book coming out. I can't say anything, but I may have had a little look at it. And it's called Be Pure, Be Vigilant, Behave, 2000 AD, and Judge Dredd, The Secret History.
I love that title.
Now, so good, yeah. I mean, I have to say, be prepared to have your socks blown off for this one. Yeah, this is a goodie. I'll tell you what, people are going to be talking about this book for a while. Can't wait for it for you lot
when
to read
is that, when is that scheduled to sort of release?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's quite soon, next couple of months. I think it's going out as a digital book first, and then I think there'll be hardbacks to follow up.
I think we should see if we can get Pat back on.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, you know how great he is. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'll tell you what would be good as well. I was chatting to Mark Lamming and Lambo and Christian Wild Goose, Goosey. At the weekend,
Goosey
about,
and Lambo. There Goosey has Lambo. To be a detective show called Goosey and Lambo, or Lambo and the Goose.
Lambo and the Goose. It can be like a goose that talks.
What and like Lambo is like a sheep, like a Rambo like sheep.
Right. Nobody copy. This is copyrighted to us.
Yeah.
Even though it's using other people's names. That's fine.
Yeah.
The
any artists out there who want to draw this.
Please do. Gibster, we know you are. We're talking about sort of kids' comics, and if there's anyone who knows about kids' comics, girls' comics, you know, weekly comics and stuff like that, and what we might be missing these days, I think it's Pat probably, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And also Lisa as well, who is absolutely brilliant at sort of promotion, and you know, she's editing a lot of stuff for him, and you know, really good. Really good stuff. Yeah, but be prepared for that one. He stuck some adverts out, or little teasers, I suppose, is the best one. You go to Millsverse or Pat Mills' Twitter page, and you can see some stuff on there.
Now, devil's advocate question.
Yeah.
beyond the many, many Pat Mills fans who are going to lap this up immediately, for the other comic reader, shall we say, is there a lot of stuff for them in this book?
I don't want to say too much, dude, but I'm going to say there's a couple of avenues people might be interested in. One, the history of British comics. I think it's very relevant to that. I don't. I think purely from the title, you can see that. Mm-hmm. And that is such a rich history. You know, we forget with, you know, British comics is kind of kept afloat mostly by the small press these days, as you see at conventions, and by, you know, some great English, you know, Scottish and, you know, British creators working for other countries, companies almost, you know. But you forget what a rich sort of history we had in this country for weekly comics, you know, even then stuff like Deadline and Crisis and, you know, all sorts of things. It's just such a rich history. And also, I don't want to give anything away, but there is the position of the editor, the position of the writer, the position of the artist, you know, and how to deal with things, I think, is going to be dealt with. I think, and there's an education there definitely in that area, I think. But I can't say any more. I honestly can't say any more. It's brilliant. I read it in a day, put it that way. Yeah, brilliant stuff. Yeah, it's not a short book, you know. It's tore through it. Yeah, very good. Awesome. I'm going to get in trouble if I say anything more, I think. But
don't say any more, Tony.
Yeah, say more. Moving along, Simon Burks, who's a friend of the show. He was on last year's On the Super Comic Con episode, I do believe. He's got a Kickstarter out, Robin, which is a great new twist on the Robin Hood story, which I think Dan spoke about a few months ago, didn't he? He did it as his recommend.
Yeah, he did.
And that's on Kickstarter. It's past its goal, but it's well worth a look. Have a look at that. And Simon is also organising the Meanwhile Comic Con, which is going to be in Chichester on the 30th of September. And I think this table's still available for that. I'm certainly going to be there. A couple of other people, Gary Harding, friend of the show, is going to be there as well. A few people. It's going to be good. I'm hoping that Ricardo Mo is going to pop along, because it's not too far for him. Next one, Sam Webster, who is, we always say that Sam, he takes part in everything, doesn't he? He's a really good friend of ours, and he's posted something on the Facebook page today, actually, which is a really interesting conversation about how to market your book. And Unfamiliar Skies issue 2 is out on Kickstarter, so go and have a look at that as well. Well worth a look. I've got a couple more, because I told you there's a few. We've got Lancaster Comics Day. That's on the 11th of June. That's at Lancaster Library, run by the Friends of the Library, for a number of charities. That will be John Freeman, a number of guests, actually. John Freeman, Nick Brokenshire, I'm going to go along. Barry Tomlinson, who worked on Roy the Rovers. Tom Ward's going to be there. Richard Piers Rayner, if anyone remembers his Doctor Who stuff. It's very well thought of. So pop along to that. And then the last one for me is LCAF, which is the 6th annual East London Comics Art Festival, which is run by No Brow and Flying Eye. And that's the 16th to the 18th of June. That's at the Round Chapel, Glenarm Road, East 5. At that will be a number of people and books we've talked about recently. So Breakdown Press will be there. I know we talked about Generous Bosom recently. Simon Morton going to be there.
Book.
And a book, yeah. Drawn and Quarterly, John C. Douglas. I think Avery Hill are going to be there. Dirty Rotten Comics, Josh Hicks, who did that wrestling comic we all loved. Jonathan Cape. There's loads of sort of workshops and stuff like that. I'm going along. It's a really good London comics festival, not a cosplayer in sight. Absolutely refreshing.
Not that we have any problem with cosplayers.
Well, you don't.
No, I don't, and I want that. I want that on the record.
Yeah, there'll be no one wandering around outside without a ticket dressed as a cyborg or anything like that. So pop along to that one. Open between 12 and 7. So it's quite a late one. I think it's quite boozy towards the end of the day. Yeah, there's that. There's my ones. You got one, haven't you?
Well, I've got a couple. First off, I just want to thank again Stacey Taylor from Stacey's Pop Culture Parlor for having me on for an impromptu extra show that she put out on this past Monday, which is available for your listening pleasure. If you want to hear two people just gush about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, she was my sounding board for that. And we also had a bloody good laugh doing it. And she put a lot of outtakes in as well. There may be some fart jokes. That's all I've got to say.
Dear.
Don't say, oh, comment. Dear. You know, you know what the topic of this show's normally like. Bloody hell. Yes. So check that out at Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour on Podbean. There's probably other links for it.
It's on iTunes as well.
Yeah. But, you know, basically the good places where you can find people like us, you can find the Pop Culture Parlour. And yep. also the Comic House that we've talked about. I know at the moment I've got a strip in there with the Hellbound Media guys, but those lovely publishers have a Kickstarter going at the moment. It's a streaming app for discovering indie comics, so it's well worth your attention. Because we've got the is it Sequentials? Is that the one you use, Tony?
What's that? Sorry. Oh yes, yeah.
Yeah, there's Sequential. There's a Comixology. You know, there's all of those for the work, but. They're stepping into the market of something that's sort of highlighting the indie comic creators all over the world. So that they've got Kickstarter. What is it? It's basically Netflix for indie comics. That's their elevator pitch. You know, I think
it's a subscription service, isn't it? Basically,
yes, yeah. yes. So they're setting up for a monthly subscription of £3, which is less than the price of most individual comics. You get access to the whole of the library, which is pretty amazing. You can also buy a yearly subscription. And you can find out more about all this on their page, of course. But it's a streaming app specifically created for independent comic community, which will benefit both the indie creators and publishers, which somehow can get lost amongst all the mainstreams. I think a lot of us out there will agree with that. But Comic House puts it front and centre. And if you wanted some samples of the stuff, the page also has some free indie comics that you can download. For instance, Sinners number one from Blue Fox Comics, which I believe Lyndon White, he works.
Oh, is he on it?
He does nice a lot of work for Blue Fox. City of Lost Souls from James McCulloch and Janine Van Moosel. Sorry if I murdered your name. And also the first issue of Comic House issue one, which I believe our sexy Daniel Butcher has work in.
Yeah, he's in that, isn't he? And also they've got 100 trades. Is it from IDW?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, they've got a load of IDW stuff coming onto the app as well, which is great. So, yeah, some great books there.
Yeah. So, this sort of app, I think, is much needed in a world where, yes, there's a few digital comics, but in terms of like helping the indie publisher, because I know certainly with Comixology, every Wednesday you're just bombarded with most of the mainstream stuff, as you are probably when you walk into a comic book shop. So, apps like this can be pretty vital, and it sounds quite exciting. So there you go. If you check out Comic House on Kickstarter, you'll be able to see their past Kickstarters that they had. But the streaming app, look for that one. It's going to be awesome. So there you go.
Yep.
And we might we have to get one of the Comic House team on the show to talk about that, why they decided to go completely mad and get involved with trying to publish indie comics.
Yes,
because it is getting indie comics out to a mainstream public is a job in itself, isn't it? Wouldn't you say, Tony?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a good move. It's a brave little move. But I think with the sort of rich scene that you've got at the moment, especially in the small press, you know, getting it all together like this.
Yeah.
We were only talking the other day about how I know Shane Chebsey's a past guest and a friend of ours. He used to run a table that you could leave your comics on and that he would sell them at conventions and stuff. And I suppose this is the digital version of that, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a nice little step forward. It's really good.
Because I think indie comics, you know, if you like indie comics, you're willing to take a punt on stuff that you don't necessarily know about. The digital leaves out those sometimes awkward moments over a convention table.
Yeah, they're always awkward with us.
Always. And that's just because we're naked.
Yeah.
So, you know, stuff like this is well worth it. And as we always say, whenever it's indie, it should still look professional. It should still look top of the range. And Comic House is making an effort to put out the best product there is. So,
yeah,
there you go. So, cool. That's quite a few shout-outs this week, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shout-out to Dan Butcher. Wherever you are, Dan, we're still thinking of you.
Yeah. I'm going to text him, ask him where he is, and then by the end of the show we might know.
Let's. Right. Now, I think we should recommend some comics, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you want to go first, Tony?
Oh, okay. I've actually got two.
Oh, here we go. How about you do one? Go on, do one.
Yeah,
do one, mate. You
put the tea on. Yeah.
You do one. I'll talk about one, and then you can do your third.
Go back to my second
you
one.
Can
okay,
do the cool. You can do your first one in the voice of Dan Butcher.
Oh, God, I can't do that.
Go on, do it. Just try it.
No.
Go on.
I'll tell you what, though. No, I'm not. Stop it. I'll tell you what, though. If you, I'm going to talk about a book that I don't know if you share an Amazon Prime or anything like that with your partner. Do you anything like that? Do you order books off the same account or anything?
Yes, pretty much. I've got an Amazon Prime account, so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I would suggest then if you do have a partner and you order this book, then you need to make it clear to your partner that you are ordering a comic, because the book I'm going to talk about is...
Where's this going, Tony?
The book I'm talking about is called The Inflatable Woman. So last thing you want is your partner to go, "Have you just ordered an inflatable woman online?"
And then you say, "Yes, Prime delivery, so it'll be here tomorrow."
Yeah, it should be here tomorrow. I'll be pumping it up in the front room. But no, it's not. It's not an inflatable woman. It is a story about written by Rachel Ball, and it's 560 pages long. So it's
I will say this: yeah. You posted up a picture of the cover, and even though the name of it, immediately people think, "Oh God, what is this going to be?" The cover immediately tells you that it's nothing like that.
Yeah, it's nothing like that. Yeah, I won't spoil it, but a brief summary of at least the start of it is: Iris Pink Percy is a lady, and she works in a zoo. She cleans out the penguins, and she stops them having fights, and she tries and fails to settle arguments with them, which they have about stuff. I think at the start of the book, they're having an argument about which way water flows down a plug hole in the Northern Hemisphere. So you're beginning to get a sort of feel for the book. It's a little bit fantasy. There's a little bit of a fantasy element to it. But one day, whilst Iris is in the shower, and they do this, she does this so well. She does this sort of in silhouette behind a shower curtain, in a wordless panel. She discovers that she's got two lumps on one of her breasts, and it's really well done. And she goes to just sort of heart-stopping moment. You know, you go from this book that's initially, you know, quite funny about these penguins, and you get that moment. You begin to realise where it's going. And she goes to a doctor and then to the hospital and is quickly diagnosed with breast cancer, and that they need to remove her breast ASAP. And what Rachel does is she tells it with a sort of black and white, sort of almost like folk tale style to it, you know. But it takes off with these little sort of bursts of fantasy. So when the doctor tells her about this, her mouth sort of disappears. And, you know that she just can't speak, you know. Little touches like that, really well done. A particularly frightening, I find it almost frightening, this moment, because some of it comes across as anxiety or sort of nightmares that she has. She gets on a train and she sits on this train. And after the time passing with her looking out the window, she realizes she's on the wrong train and she's unable to get off. It's sort of one of those sort of classic anxiety nightmares that you have, you know. And she's sort of surrounded by people. There's two people opposite her with the sort of dead eyes and the faces of strangers who are sort of very harshly cruel, and they talk to her. And she heads off and she sits on a hill, and she's approached by a friend of hers who, to me, looks a bit like an androgynous sort of goth version of Where's Wally. But this friend of hers is riding, he's sort of got eyeliner and dark, lank, dark hair, you know, but happens to be riding an elephant, of course. And the pair sit on the top of the hill and they get drunk, and they're sitting near the ape enclosure. And Iris is trying to work out what she's done well in her life. She's just had this sort of life-changing moment. And as I understand it, I've listened to the interviews with Rachel, and this is an autobiographical comic of some kind. You know, it certainly sort of translates a lot of the feelings about her experiences into a book. And a friend says to her, what have you done well, you know? And she says, I can't think of anything I've done well. And she says, well, you've raised some very polite monkeys. And shortly after this, a voice comes from off panel saying, "Banana, please, thank you very much." Yeah, and which you obviously know is one of the monkeys asking for a banana. But it's very much done in a way that you realise that this is how your subconscious affects your sort of constructive thinking. And as the book goes on, you feel the sort of nerves and the fear of the diagnosis through the sort of walking dreams that she has, I think, to a certain extent. At one point, the penguins gather outside a window to sing and play the guitar, but they can't hold it together because penguins, you know, like to argue with each other. And then Iris meets a man online. She joins a dating site. And I heard an interview on the Panel Borders website podcast with her, and this came from a small sort of, you know, in some way from a real experience she had. And she tells this person she used to be a ballerina, and he tells her he works in a lighthouse. And I think kind of because he works in a lighthouse, her story becomes more elaborate about her life as a ballerina. And I get the impression that his working in a lighthouse is also a little bit fantastical. and she becomes a little bit obsessed with him. And you see that this is an avenue that allows her to forget about a mastectomy as she goes through it. It's very personal. It is incredibly a very personal book. And you look directly into the sort of feelings and emotions and the life of someone who's put every, and she does really put everything out there in this comic. Incredible, incredibly well done. But done in a fantastical framework, but very raw. It's done as a sort of diary. So the days tick by, you know, and you get, you know, the 28th of August and you get this sort of thing as the book comes on. It's honesty is, it's stories are honest, but they're done in a just such a different way. At one point she's having an injection. They're putting a line into her arm, you know, and rather than it being an injection, it's a crow that suddenly appears and starts pecking painful bruises on her arms and stuff like that.
Oh God.
Yeah, it's quite frightening at moments like that. But then, you
but
know, the
it sums up the experience. You kind of, I mean, I had that reaction just then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a during the treatment and after a sort of series of events that have really got Iris very low. There's this page that just hits you properly in the guts where she says she's talking to a friend and she says, "I'm not Iris, I'm a hollow thing." Incredible page. I was absolutely speechless. And she does grab moments in the book like that where you just suddenly you're confronted with the rawness and the, you know, the sort of harshness of life, really. And then there'll be penguins there or something like that that appear. A lot of the pages have multiple panels. They're not all the pages have words on them, and many of them are just singular central panels. So don't think, you know, this book's 560 pages long. It's not a dense read. But it's not a quick read, but it's not a dense read. Do you know what I mean? The dialogue is very, very sharply observed and is written. Moments and long sequences are written in poetry, whether it be her own, Rachel's own sort of words, or certainly the guy who works in the lighthouse uses lines of poetry, and it obviously means a lot to her. And I won't ruin the end, but it will raise a smile and you might get a little bit of a tear out of it. Incredibly strong book. It's so good, I think, to be honest, it's going to feature on my best of the year. I can see it already going to feature on my best to get to Christmas.
In the Awesome Awards 2017.
That's it, exactly. I had the pleasure of meeting Rachel at a comics event at the Cartoon Museum. She's a very funny lady. You know, great company, very funny. And this is an extremely well thought of book, certainly in certain circles of the comics world, and rightly so. I recommend it to anyone who wants to read a book that has some beautiful, absolutely beautiful drawings in it, all in black and white. It's a lovely hardback. It was only £18.99. When you think of a book that's 560 pages long, that's great value. It's from Bloomsbury. If you go to www.bloomsbury.com, you can get yourself a copy. Yeah, that's my one. There you go.
Nice. How do I follow that up? I tell you what, I'll follow up with a werewolf book.
Oh, good.
Hey. Yes. First, I need to give a thank you to JP Jordan on Twitter, because he brought this one to my attention the week it came out, which is I think it's been out for 2 weeks now. But this is
okay.
Nam Wolf number one, as in like Nam Wolf number one, just in case my tongue was too big for my mouth then. Now the basic setup for this is, when scrawny Marty Spencer is drafted into the Vietnam War, he finds himself smack dab in the middle of the heart of darkness. But Marty has a secret even from himself, and Vietnam is a hell of a place to find out you're a werewolf. Bang. That's all it says in the synopsis, and that is all you need to know. Immediately you're like, God, I want to rent that, and I want to watch it. This is put out by Albatross Books, who I believe are Eric Powell's publisher.
Oh, okay. I wondered who was putting it out. Yeah, it's the cover's very like a lot of his stuff, isn't it?
Yes.
You can see it, yeah.
Yes. The cover for issue one is a wonderful sort of red and black silhouette against a nice... It's got a cream sort of background, so it's really striking and very nice look at. But I know what you mean. It looks like Eric Powell kind of stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I've seen that issue 2 has a similar sort of cover, only it's a different shape. And it's, it's sort of blue, so visually it's quite striking. This one is written by, and I'll probably murder the names, but written by Fabian Rangel Jr., drawn by Logan Ferber, colours Brennan Wagner, and the letters are Warren Montgomery. So I guess the team. This is a cracking book. I mean, I got it on Comixology. Purely because, I mean, I think I was sold by the name alone. Is that weird?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's strange for us, isn't it? It's like Wolf Cop or something like that. Yeah. You know we're going to look at it. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Of course, I did have a look at the preview just to make sure that the art followed through on the brilliant cover, and it does. The art is really unique. It's got a style that reminded me in some ways to artists like James Harren.
Does
that make sense? The artist at Rumble. That's not to say it's that like it. It's almost that it brought that to my mind. It's got a bit of a European flair to it as well. For instance, like characters have like dots for eyes instead of being like fully detailed. Which is a detail I've thought about using myself for some stories. And reading a story like this could inspire me to try something similar in the future for maybe a project that I may be working on. We don't know.
More soon.
But those sort of, I always find it fascinating when artists use that for eyes. Do you know what I mean? The dots and all of the expression comes with the rest of the facial features in a way. You know, you kind of, eyebrows become a hugely important tool when it comes to like emotions, doesn't it? And visual language on a face, because you haven't, you know, it's not like you can open an eye wide or close it. You know, like you would, if you saw like a big two book, you know, you can see the whole of the eye, can't you? And like the iris, you don't have any irises to play with or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I like it when someone uses this kind of style, but you still get everything you need to get. You know. So,
yeah.
And seeing books like this, which keeps it quite serious. I mean, when I describe it like that, it sounds quite cartoony, and Logan's style does have that sort of animated kind of flair about it, but he's not afraid to put in some quite serious bits as well. And his art's great and hugely responsible for giving the book like its own individual style that keeps it faithful to the setting, because I can't remember the last time I read like a Vietnam set book. Can you?
No. What was that one about zombies in Vietnam?
I stay away from a lot of the zombie stuff in wartime type things.
Right.
But I know what you mean. Like, people put zombies in wartime places now, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, back in the day, I loved books like The Nam, because it was
in the
back of The Punisher. But, yeah, so that, the art's great and sets that up, but it's, I must say that the, like, Brennan's one, he has a colour palette which is spot on, because, like, you have the detail of the fields and the jungles of Vietnam, but he lights them sort of perfectly with, like, orange sunsets, you know, which really brings to mind how it should, you know, the atmosphere is perfect, like the all the cool blues of like the night sky. And let's face it, if there's a werewolf on the prowl, there's going to be a night sky somewhere.
I would think if you're a werewolf in Vietnam, it's going to be pretty hot in that fur, isn't it? It's all right if you're in Transylvania or something
can't
like that.
Out
you know,
the fur, can they? Do you know what I
mean? No, it's it. Yeah, must be boiling.
Oof. Maybe that's something they'll touch upon later in this story.
Yeah, Sweaty Werewolf is a sequel.
Do you know what? I'd laugh if they did. Dear God, I'd laugh to put that story bit in.
It keeps having to shake. You know the way dogs do that shake? Keeps having to do that.
Yeah. Oh, dear. You can't see like smells of like matted fur and sweat.
Yeah.
Oh. Ooh. So, obviously, with the night, it obviously brings the werewolf transformation, a hugely important part of a werewolf book. And this one gets a 12-panel page, which has some real nice close-ups, and once again, colour tones, nicely representing the horror of what's happening. And that page, in turn, leads to a fantastic splash page, where you have to see it for yourself, but there may be a werewolf firing a machine gun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. The werewolf himself is a pretty unique design. It's almost, it doesn't look too much dog-like in a way. It's almost like a huge bear in some ways. I quite like that though. I'm quite a werewolf purist in some ways. I prefer my lichens as bipeds rather than like a dog on all fours. This one is on two legs. But in terms of like the facial design and everything. It does. It's one of the more monstrous werewolves, you could say, because it just looks horrifying. But when you design these sort of monsters, even though I've got a certain set way of how I like things, if a different design is done with character and something, you know, with a little quirk, and if you do it with enough passion, it can totally work, I think. And this one's great. So let's face it, with a book called Nan Wolf, the story could quite easily go full on trauma or wolf cop.
Yeah.
That would be probably an easier way to go. And it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, because, you know, there's a time and a place for that sort of craziness.
Yeah, we like a bit of schlock, don't we?
Yeah, we do like a bit of schlock. But this particular tale, it rides a line that it's got a bit of a serious flavour to it, but it's still fully aware of what it is. Do you know what I mean? You know, if you want a Vietnam story, it gives it to you. If you want a werewolf story, you've got that as well. But there's some nice dramatic dialogue and narration, I think, which works brilliantly. It works really nicely in place of the sort of storytelling I really like. I like a nice... for instance, the first page starts... It doesn't start in Vietnam. The boy's... He's young, he's signed up, he's being shipped off to war, and his dad's really concerned about him because I think his dad knows what's going to happen. And as the boy goes away on the bus, his teacher says, "I'll pray for your son, sir." And the dad just says, "Don't pray for my boy, ma'am. Pray for everyone else." I was like, "Oh, immediately I'm in."
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's those sort of that nice bit of dramatic sort of dialogue and pacing.
Okay. Is it a mini, is it, or
I think it is going to be a mini. I think it's going to be like 4 or 5 pages. So,
okay.
Yeah. And it doesn't there is a bit of blood. It's not an all ages book. This isn't a it's a, you know, it's a Vietnam book. You can't really do those. You know, it has to be a fairly grown-up book in some ways, isn't it? And you do see a character, for instance, he joins a platoon, and in those classic, I don't know, you got the classic sort of Vietnam platoons, every single one of them has like a name, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, there's one guy called Radio Jones, and a character called Burnout, and there's the Doc. There's always a Doc, isn't there?
Yeah, got to have a Doc, haven't you?
Yeah, and one of these characters... does get taken
out. Is
there
a club boombox at all?
No, unfortunately, no.
A double bag?
I tell you what, we should put all of those names into a Vietnam platoon and write our own story.
Yeah.
But one of the characters does get taken out by a sniper shot, and it doesn't mess about. It really doesn't mess about. It doesn't...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there is a bit of blood in it, but rightfully so. And there's a mystery... because the enemy that they're facing, they've got some supernatural things on their side as well, which are going to play out. So it's really good. I was really thoroughly impressed and surprised about this. Now, if you see it in your comic shops, be sure to pick it up. I mean, as soon as you open the pages, you'll know what you're getting in for.
Yeah.
I don't know what the price is on the shelf. I know digitally it was $2.49, which is on the upper scale of what I buy individual issues.
Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it?
That is a lot. Certainly with independent books. Makes me sound tight, but you know, normally it's £2 or less, I think, for the individual, you know, unless it's a collection, you know, so you're talking more, but this is like a 24 page, 28 page sort of cover. What is it? 24 pages.
Yeah. Right.
So maybe it's on the upper scale of the digital, but probably for like £1 or so more, you can probably get the print copy, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So if you see it, I think the second issue is going to be out fairly soon. So keep an eye out for Nan Wolf. It just sounds like a book we'd like. So check it out. Well worth it.
Cool.
Now, Tony Butcher.
He's let us know where he is, isn't he? Send us a message.
Where is he?
He said, I'm feeling pretty fucked, to be honest. That's where he is. That's right, isn't it?
Do you think he's trapped down a well?
Might be. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hopefully he's not. But yeah.
No. We hope you're
he's
right,
on
Dad.
His way home. He's on his way home. There you go. Good.
Bless him.
Good to know. I've said text me when you get indoors, so I know you're safe.
I know what it is. It's too much sunny delight.
It is, yeah.
So what is your next recommendation, Tom?
My second one is, I was just going to do Rachel Ball's book, but this arrived through my letterbox, and it is Cognition Issue 2, which I backed on Kickstarter from a friend of the show. Our friend by Scripts and Letters is Ken Reynolds. Art is Sam Bentley. The editor is David Hailwood, and it's got pinups by a who's who of people that clearly we have brought up, and they've done so well by knowing us. That's a joke. Alfie Gallagher, Stuart McCune, Paul Moore, Daryl Thorpe, Matt Strott, and Gareth Hopkins. That's a list of people you wouldn't want in your house all at once, isn't it? Let's face it.
Just eating all your hummus.
Yeah. It opens on a church in Suffolk, which I think is where Ken's from, isn't it? In 1577. And there's lightning and the rain is kicking it down outside, and a demon attacks the people in the church. And this is the sort of story of the legend that the British Occult Secret Service, or BOSS, as they're known, which is a sort of higgledy-piggledy group of crazy people that have been well established in previous issues, go to investigate a new drama at that church. And they head off to investigate something. It's a kind of told in one go story, but leads into other things. I don't think you can review Cognition without paralleling the BPRD books. It stands on its own, and it is a creation of its own. But I love the fact that we've got this sort of almost British team of BPRD officers. Does that make a sense?
Totally.
I would be deceitful, I think, if I hadn't mentioned BPRD, put it that way, because I think it's a great touchstone for this book. It's not part of the universe, but it would make a great companion piece. I could easily see Dark Horse picking it up as the British one. You know, there's a backup that's written and drawn by the mighty Ken himself called Whisper Into the Void, which is also a spooky psychological nightmarish tale which is connected to the Cognition universe. Ken rocks it again. He does well with the creepy mystical detective series. Real high quality writing that continues. I think I'll say pings moments of character. So he sums up characters through moments of dialogue so well. Everyone in it now, they're not all humans. I won't ruin it for everyone, but go and have a look. Everyone is clear and established as a particular kind of character, put it that way. But he also allows them to breathe this sort of mysterious background, which we get a little bit of it in this. It's kind of a flashback. I won't ruin it. It's kind of a flashback that something happens. Sam Bentley's art, he has this sort of real sort of shadowy quality. Everything is done with light and dark. It's a black and white comic, but it's done with this sort of light and dark shadow quality to it. I'm not going to say photorealistic, but it's very realistic in its images. This issue, compared to the last issue, was a little bit more, I'm going to say, out in the light. So it was very heavily, darkly shadowed previously. This one, people are sort of stepping out a little bit more into the night. I'm not saying it as a criticism of this or the previous one. I think it works well in both issues. Especially noticeable in the flashback sequence, you get some experiments in layouts that Sam takes. I'm not sure at the request of Ken or not, but this is the section that contains the flashbacks, and they're almost wordless. And the narrative sort of floats around the way that he's designed the page, if you get what I mean. You'll see it when you get it. I got the Kickstarter, which came with all the Marvelous prints. If you fancy a copy, Ken is at MCM next weekend, so pop over and see him. He'll have the Sliced Quarterly, he'll have Cognition, he'll have all the stuff that he works on. If you go to facebook.com/Cognition, or if you go to K Reynolds Design on Twitter, or go to www.kenreynoldsdesign.co.uk. You can see more of the work. It's a great series. I love the fact that he's consistent. It's a good and it's a fun and it's a great horror book. And it's coming out at regular intervals, and he's doing really well with it. And I think it's evidence of Ken's, who we know is like a machine around this stuff. And not only is he doing the Slice sort of regularly, almost daily I get updates around the new Slice projects, but you've also got this on the go and a few other things that he's working on. Great stuff, really good.
Yeah. Awesome. And he's one of the many indie creators going to be at MCM.
Yeah.
This coming weekend, as we speak now, isn't it?
Yes, it is now, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be lots of former guests of this show who are going to be there. So, you know, we've heard a lot about MCM.
Hoping to pop down for a drink afterwards. So I'm going down. I'm not going to go to the convention itself.
Yeah.
I'm not into self-harming, but I'm going to go down. down afterwards. So there you go.
But if you are visiting MCM and you check out Comics Village or whatever it's called, Comics Hamlet, whatever it is these days, or if you're someone who's there, we'd love to know from the horse's mouth what the MCM's like for the small press and the independent creator.
Yeah, is it worth doing? Is one of the questions we'll probably ask you. You know, yes. Is it good sales?
Yes.
What's the attendance like?
There'll probably be a post in the on the group page, which we'll get to in a bit. But you can also let us know on Awesome Comics Talk.
Oh
no, Awesome Comics Pod. I'm so obsessed with the Facebook group. What's all that about? I'm obsessed with it.
You are.
It's awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Yeah, let us know on there, like live as you're there. Well, obviously not the creators; they'll be too busy, either selling their comics or getting drunk. Naughty, naughty children. But yes, we hope you enjoyed this show. It's been a cracking one.
Yeah.
Before we tell you about next week's show, oh, it's going to be exciting, that one.
Yeah.
If there's anything you wanted to let us know about the show or anything coming up, email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. The Awesome Pod Jam piece is still alive. It's still kicking.
We still got something new today, didn't we?
Yeah, we did indeed. It's still there. All different kinds of characters and creators from the Indian small press scene from all over the world are coming together in one glorious, glorious print, which is going to be available in August. Thank you to everyone who's supplied stuff so far. It's seriously amazing. You know, some of these characters haven't even existed yet in a comic. The comics are being worked on as we speak, but they already want to be part of this jam piece. We will accept. And you know, it doesn't matter if it's cartoony, if it's serious.
All different. That's the idea. All different styles are welcome, yeah.
It's just a character, 300 DPI. It's a dot PNG is best, if you know what that term is. Colour, it can be black and white. I know you don't, Tony. It can be colour, it can be black and white, but send it to awesome. Not awesome. See, I'm obsessed. I don't know what's happened to me this week, Tony. It's the pear cider. That's what it is.
Yeah, Perry.
Or the Perry. Tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Yes, and we will put them together. I'll do another work in progress soon. I bet a lot of people who send stuff in ask, is it too late to send this in? No, it's not.
No, not.
We've still got a good couple of months to run this idea dry.
So. But do it now if you can.
Yeah. I haven't put my character in it yet. I need to draw
That's
that.
True.
So there you go. Yes, on Twitter, follow us at The Awesome Pod, where I think this coming week there's going to be quite a few questions. There may be a few polls. And we'll be asking for your opinions on next week's show. You can like us on facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and please join the group Awesome Comics Talk. It's cracking. We've had some brilliant stuff on there recently.
Yeah.
And as long as you're not a bot or...
Yeah, it's hard to... I've messaged you two today, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't sure about one of them, so I'm not really sure. I sort of leave them if I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the time we can tell, but... If you, for instance, on your Facebook page, if there's absolutely nothing to show that you're going, do you know what I mean?
You're into comics, or
yeah, we probably aren't going to add you. But
yeah, and if there isn't anything on your page that's into comics, then just message us and say, oh, you know, I'm interested in this, or I've listened to the show, or my friend's a member of the group, and I said, can I join? That's fine.
Mm.
Then we know you're not a robot.
Yeah,
we let robots join. We're not robot racists.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not all
well, of according to Dan, every show ends up with us talking about sex with robots.
He does. He likes that. That's why he guides it.
He always guides us down that dirty mechanical path. But yes, Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. Search for it and join it. It's probably the only decent reason to be on Facebook these days.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, before we do the final links, next week is the 100th episode.
It is.
Yes. Somehow, some way, we haven't fallen apart. We haven't had a fight. We've had so many nice guests. We seemingly still have more to learn every week. That always surprises me, because like
I just get more confused as the weeks go on.
What's a PNG?
I don't even know what that means. No, that was how I didn't ask. I'll just let it wash over me now.
Oh, don't do that. But yes, it's going to be episode 100 next week. And it's just going to be the three of us talking comics, talking smack, probably. But let's just open this up to the listeners. I know we've got a lot of people out there who probably want to ask us something. We haven't done a listener question.
Sold us.
We haven't had a listener question episode for
a while. That's a good idea.
So let's open this up. Do you have anything you want to ask us? Now, this doesn't mean you can just insult us constantly.
Yeah, it kind of does.
You know, they can be funny questions, but also, is there anything about making comics or creating comics or stuff like that you'd like to know? Now's the perfect time, because we haven't got a guest on, so we'll probably run out of things to say, won't we, Tony?
Yep.
Yeah. So, certainly email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. I will line them up, and then I'll just fire questions at these guys next week. We will probably... I don't know. Do you have an Ask Auntie Tony question?
Oh, that's true. We haven't done one of them for a while, have we?
Yes. Do you have any relationship questions you need answered? We've got Tony Esmond, so if anything...
Yep.
That'll teach you.
I go through relationships almost hourly, so I'm pretty experienced.
Like a wood chipper, aren't you?
Yep. Has ordering an inflatable woman online caused a problem in your relationship?
And did you get it on Prime?
Yeah.
So there you go, and we will be putting stuff online because we want your input for episode 100 because we'll probably say more of this next week. But we couldn't do it without the support of all of you lovely people listening.
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah, the interaction's really good. We really like that, I have to say. Yeah. Well, 90% of it. Yeah.
We're not all about the money. We're not all, but.
It's
nice to know that we're not just shouting into the void.
But if you do want to come on the show, it'll be £1,000.
Yes. maybe a sexual favour. What?
Definitely a sexual favour.
Of course. Better to give than to receive. What? No.
Pam Anderson's making any comics these days.
Did she ever make comics?
Well, she did barbed wire, didn't she? I think she was part of that for a while, wasn't she?
She didn't make the comics, though, did she?
Didn't she start on it, though? I don't know. Wasn't she part of it to begin with? I don't know.
Yeah. All I know is the film's awful.
Tanya Tate, are you thinking of making a comic? Please contact us.
Contact tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Very good. we've got a little surprise next week, haven't we?
Yes, we are going to make an announcement in amongst all the frivolity.
Yeah.
We
are getting married.
Yeah, we are. Should we get some cake for next week's show, Tony?
Yeah.
Obviously, we won't be in the same room, but we could just have a slice of cake each.
We could FaceTime each other eating cake.
You're not doing that to my face.
Bum cake.
What? Oh, very nutty. What would be your cake of choice?
Oh, I don't know, actually. I'm a bit of a traditionalist. Maybe just a Victoria sponge. I like that sort of thing.
I would have thought you'd be a carrot cake type of man.
Oh, I do like carrot cake. Yeah, that is true.
What with you being a veggie?
I like cheesecake.
Oh, that's very true.
That's nice.
Yeah. You've got to be careful with cheesecake, though, don't you? For instance, like the classic New York cheesecake is always good.
Oh, it's too much. Too much.
You think?
Yeah, it's the amount of cheesecake they give you on a plate. It's like enough for four of you. I do that sort of Lady and the Tramp sort of thing. You invite ladies over to sit and eat cheesecake with me.
Oh. Oh.
Why is this down and out bloke? Why is this hobo inviting me over to have cheesecake with him?
Why is he giving me a bib?
Why is he trying to feed me it with a spoon?
Why are you just screaming, eat it?
If you want me to feed you cheesecake, then write in to @JesterDiablo.
Son of a bitch. But thank you for listening to the show. I think you'll find that this one, considering it was just before number 100, it didn't descend into complete madness, did it?
No, it didn't. Yeah. I wonder why that was. Oh, yeah, Dan wasn't
here. Dan's not here.
He's going to kill you for saying that.
You said it.
What?
Don't you throw me under the bus, because I'll take you with me. But seriously, Dan, we miss you.
I've never
done
a bank robbery with you.
Thank you for listening.
We're in next week's surprise that we're doing a bank robbery together.
Yes, it's going to be streaming live from the NatWest in... Oh, no, I bet not.
Also, if you want crack cocaine, write into dan@vanguard.com.
Right, thank
that's a joke
you.
For anyone listening. It's a joke.
Yes. I don't think.
And
anybody,
I did mention Putin earlier. That was also a joke.
I don't think anyone takes anything on this show seriously. Surely.
No,
I hope not. Thank you for listening to us. Whether it was on the Pod B Podbean website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, the Podnose Network, or wherever you found us, thank you very much for searching us out. Leave us a cheeky review. You know, that'd be nice for episode 100. It'd be nice to.
Oh yeah, like a couple of like nice reviews.
Yeah,
and drop us a few retweets. It was like I put a message out saying drop us a few retweets, and some people did. It's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very nice. We do appreciate. We really appreciate all the support that you guys give us.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
It's amazing. Now, where can people find us online, Tony?
You can find me at Ezohyz, and I've got something which I may have sort of telegraphed earlier, hopefully coming out at neverironanything.blogspot.com very soon.
Nice. There you go. You got a lot coming out, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, we've got. Yeah,
you should see a doctor about that.
I know. Yeah, back to dongs again.
Ding dong, the witch is dead. Now you can follow me at Jester Diablo on Twitter, or find out more about my comic at the Red Mask from Mars.com. And Dan the Man Butcher, the one who always drags us into the gutter but is still the classiest of all three of us, you can find him at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard Comic at vanguardcomic.com. Did I get that right?
Cool, that's right. Yeah,
that's a mouthful, isn't it? Certainly after a nice peri. Mm.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, we'll see you next week for number 100. Oh, it's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring it. Bring the questions.
Bring the noise. We just appreciate at least one question. That'd be nice.
Yeah. Otherwise, we'll have to make a load up.
We will.
That reminds me of a quiz we ran about 2 years ago.
Oh, the times we've had. Next week might be more like This Is Your Life. Oh dear. But thank you very much, folks. Hope you enjoy this episode. Go check out Scurry online because it's well worth it. And just check out comics. Have a great week. Read loads of cool indie comics. There's some great ones coming up this week, I believe. So read comics, have fun, enjoy MCM, and as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya. See ya. It's almost bedtime in England, so you go and have a good time for the rest of your, because it's, what is it, morning still with you, is it?
Yeah.
It's about noon right now, but I think I might take a nap.
You son of a bitch. Unbelievable.